fighting for America.
The Republican Party's in this big, massive civil war. It's Tea Party versus establishment, libertarians versus social conservatives. There's infighting, conflict, backbiting, discord.
Fighting for Idaho.
I don't want to scare people, but waves of terrorism, stuff that we've never seen or heard before by small groups, much like Paris, I'm very worried about it, and I'm very worried about an incredibly porous border.
Fighting for you.
Thank you for having this great show on in the morning, because without it, we wouldn't have any real conservative voice out there on the radio.
Voices, Mr. Right.
Like me, friend me, and we'll have a great time together.
Kevin Miller in the morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Boy, why do a lot of people on the social media just have it in for the Ducks? Couldn't believe it last night after the game, Ohio State winning, as you heard. After the game, people are saying, I'm happy they lost. Even people that we work with here, ripping the Ducks. Even though we had a couple, flags a-flying, I think people would be cheering for the West Coast team. Anyway, good morning. Kay Millie with you here at 580 KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. We're joined by our great friend, Nagmaid Abedini. Nagmaid, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
And certainly, I know you're in the middle of a week of prayer and fasting, actually 21 days of this, to raise awareness, to focus in on your husband. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think we're on day 8 of 21 of prayer and fasting. I starting the new year, I wanted to start off with focus on God and praying for Saeed's release. And ultimately, that's all I have to rely on. It's our third year, going on third year of his imprisonment, and there doesn't seem to be any movement. So this is my next focus, is to prayer and fast and call ask people to join.
Well, for people that are not familiar, and we have people tuning in and out all the time around the world and around the country, can you give us a little background? Because it's been a while since we've talked about how your husband has gotten to Iran and has been imprisoned there unlawfully for going on year three now.
You know, he was there working on an orphanage with the Iranian government. He traveled many times. We started the orphanage in the year 2009, and he traveled more than 9-10 times to Iran from 2009 to 2012, working on this orphanage with the Iranian government. And June of 2012, he left to finish getting some of the paperwork finished, and he was supposed to be gone for a few weeks, and he never came back. Now, he is a Christian, and when he was taken, we realized that the Revolutionary Guard, which is considered a terrorist group, which are considered the hardliners, had taken over dealing with the Christian cases, whereas before it was the intelligence police handling Christian cases or religious minorities. And so we realized there was a shift in how religious minorities were being treated in Iran, and that could have been part of the reason Saeed was taken. Also, we know now that around that time, Iran and U.S. were meeting confidentially, starting to talk about the nuclear issues, and I do believe part of that is that he was taken as hostage, as a pawn.
And a lot of folks wondered, why he did this, but as you said, and we've talked about before, he had assurances from the Iranian government.
He did, and he traveled so many times to Iran. He had assurances he would meet with the intelligence police every time he would travel. They would talk about the orphanage. They had given approval. We were done with 80% of paperwork. We were almost done with the building, and he was just being encouraged. And there was no sign he was following every rule, everything that the Iranian government was telling him for the orphanage, and he was taken unexpectedly. So it was, he was just he didn't. They and when they convicted him to 8 years in prison, they didn't say he had broken any law. They didn't say he was a spy. They didn't say that he had broken any law. They gave him 8 years in 2013 for house church formation that had happened in the year 2000. So something that had happened 13 years earlier, which is a legal act in Iran. Now, gathering of religious minorities in houses is a law, is allowed by the Iranian law, is protected by the Iranian law. And actually, Iran has signed on to international laws saying that they allow for house churches or gatherings in homes of religious, you know, minorities. They allow that for religious minorities. So what they convicted him of is illegal, is something that is a legal act. So he hasn't, according to their own admittance, Saeed hasn't broken any law.
Well, and I think it comes as a shock that the way that we have our criminal justice system here, the way we express our freedoms here, is not the same in other countries, particularly in Iran.
It's not. And, you know, it's an Islamic state, so it's it has to be, you know, anything that's outside of their belief or their interpretation is considered an attack to their national security. So religious minorities are considered threats. Luckily, they did not kill my husband, but a lot of Christians are martyred and killed simply for being Christians and believing differently. They're good citizens. They've never done anything against the government, but unfortunately, they're under attack, as many have seen, not only in Iran, but all over the Middle East. And, you know, as we see on the news, it's expanding to Europe and the rest of the world, unfortunately.
As someone who has dealt with this firsthand and continues to this day, are you surprised by, and pardon me if this is the wrong phrase, the ignorance of the people in France to the reaction they would get from the radical Islam people?
You know, I think anything France should know, because they're, you know, they have dealt with Islam in their country for a long time now, and they've tried to integrate it into their culture. But there's a difference between the Muslim people and Islam. I often pray for the Muslim people because I believe they're in this bondage as well, and religion that doesn't fill them, that doesn't do anything for them. But, you know, in its essence, it does preach hate and intolerance of anything, you know, and so that's normal. As someone growing up in the Middle East, you know that if you say the smallest thing against Muhammad, or if you say I don't believe in this, you will be killed. And so everyone who's ever been raised in a Muslim country knows that there is no tolerance of anything, and that's how it is. I think the West and Europe and as Americans, we're just starting to see that there's no tolerance of any other belief or any other ideas, and that Islam does operate by fear. So you live under the fear of having to conform to their ideology and accept their method and their ideas. And if you don't, there's a threat of your life being taken. And that's a threat that most people live in. And that's why I pray for the Muslim people. They live under this threat daily in all of these Muslim countries.
Well, Nagmaid, I still, you know, we've seen this with Salman Rushdie and others, that if you speak out, if you joke, they're coming to get you. If you don't joke, if you're a Christian, they're coming to get you. And it's amazing that in France and throughout the world, they have a response of shock that they would think that the press would be immune to these attacks.
You know, that's something that I think a lot of people don't know, there's two sets of writing in Islam. One is when it was written in Medina, when Islam was weak and it's very peaceful and very nice, which most Muslims follow those kind of writings. It talks about getting along. And then there was the writings that were written when Muhammad was in Mecca, when Islam was very strong, and that's where you see the violence and jihad and taking over and no tolerance for Christians or Jews. So you see when, for in the Muslim countries or in you know, Islamic countries, when Islam starts becoming strong, you see the intolerance. So as you said, at some point you could not even be saying anything, but you could just be holding your own belief and you could still be attacked. When Islam becomes a majority, then it's not even okay for you to be a Christian or have your own belief in your own house. And that's what most Christians in Iran have. They're not trying to force their belief on anyone. They're just wanting to believe in Jesus in their own house, in the privacy of their own house, and that's not even allowed. People are dragged out of their houses, they're imprisoned, they're killed simply for believing differently. And so once, you know, as you mentioned, even believing something that's different than you know, Islam, the ideology could be dangerous once you see a majority.
And
Islam being the majority.
And you have the courage to speak out about this, but most folks, if they would say what you would say, talking about Mecca and Medina and the two forms of Islam, they'd be ripped for being bigoted.
You know, because it's not, it's really, you know, there has to be a difference. You know, I noticed that I was starting to have hate in my heart towards Muslims after my husband was taken, and that's wrong. There's a difference between being opening your eyes and realizing this is Islam. You can't hide your head under the sand and say, no, this is not Islam. You have to come to an agreement. You have to see every single Muslim country, what's happening. Is there tolerance of homosexuals? Is there equality for women? Is there equality, you know, justice and value for human life as we hold it? Is, you know, and so you look at any Muslim country and you see they're treating people the same way, because that's the deep root ideology of Islam. So Islam does not have any tolerance. Islam is a religion of conquering. That's how it was founded. Muhammad and all of his followers who took over after him, that was the way Islam expanded. By, you know, Iran was a Persian, it was not Muslim. Iran had a different religion. Actually, many Iranians, Persians, were Christian before Islam came. And Islam, the way it expanded in the Middle East, was through force. And so that's how Islam works, but that's not the Muslim people. We can't hate the Muslim people. They're trapped in this religion as well, and that's all they know. And it has left them to an empty life, as Saeed would say. He was also following Islam, and he, when he found Christ, he found life. But in Islam, he was empty. And so I pray for the Muslims, because they're trapped. That's all they know. So we have to make a difference of knowing what Islam is and calling it for what it is. It's no tolerance. It preaches hate, but not hating the Muslims, but really praying for them and really wanting them freed of this bondage, of this religion they're in.
More coming up with our great friend Nagmay Dabadini. Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get you to traffic. You're listening to 580.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
It was like one in a midnight. I heard a voice woke me up and called my name, said, Saeed, I'm coming back soon. Go to preach my gospel. I woke up, look around, no one was in the room, so I back to sleep again. The second time and third time happened again, the same night. Three times I heard the voice. And the last time I heard like a huge voice shaking the room. And I woke up, I was scared. I felt as the first time in my life the presence of the Lord on me. It was very heavy and scary.
There we have it, the words of Pastor Saeed. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. We're joined by his wife, Nagmay Dabadini. And Nagmay, your thoughts when you hear that?
That was when Saeed's life was transformed. Islam was all he knew, and he was willing to die and kill for Islam. But he felt empty and depressed, and that's when God met him, and he had a vision, he had an encounter, and he knew that Jesus was the way, and that changed his life, where from wanting to destroy to wanting to lay down his life for orphans and people. And the value that God showed him in human life, the value of human life that comes from our Maker. And that transformed his life, knowing God personally through Jesus Christ and knowing that human life matters. And if anything, he would lay down his life to save a human life. And that there's a big difference. You know, it can't be, it's not politically correct to say, but the same God can't be saying human life does not matter to destroy, and that human life matters, and that we are to protect it and we are to defend it.
Nagmaid, what have you learned in your journey being here in the Treasure Valley to traveling the world, raising awareness about your husband?
It's been hard. It's been a hard journey. It's been something I never anticipated, but I've learned the biggest thing I have learned and discovered and that I treasure has been a solid, a real, intimate relationship with God. And it's not a theory. It's not something that you is made up. It's not a religion. It's a relationship. And that's been something that has gotten me through the everyday and has given me a lot of peace and joy. And I've discovered that a lot of our trials in our life, broken relationships, finances, fear, you know, what we're seeing in our world, a lot of that can be, if you allow it, can be a tool to allow you to draw closer to God, to discover God, and to see, discover God's plan for your life and be what God has made you to be. And you know, I would have never imagined being in front of, you know, our Congress, the United Nations, the, you know, all over the world speaking. But, you know, when I draw close to God, then God opens those doors and uses, you know, uses your life. So I would encourage people to do is to not count your suffering in vain and to embrace it and allow you to discover a more fullness of God, discover God. And that's what that's the best way to deal with suffering. And it's just amazing once you discover the reality of God.
In combating this evilness, have you learned anything about the good in people?
There is good in people. I've just, you know, both, I have to say, first from just the community and just across the world, the compassion and love. And a lot of people say that when something bad happens, like what we saw in France, you see people uniting and standing up and saying, we're there with you. And that's beautiful. That's just light compared to the dark that has happened. And at the same time, I've seen, you know, last month I traveled to Dearborn and I saw precious Muslims who didn't know, and I got to share about my faith and my testimony, and they didn't know anything and anything better. And so I've seen how compassion even in Muslims who don't know any better have not been taught about the love of God. And but yes, as we've seen even in France, when something bad and dark happens, then people come together and say, we're there with you. And I've experienced that over the last 2.5 years from Boise, especially, you know, being in from Boise, but also from all over the U.S. and all over the world. People have really come together and said, we're there with you and we're standing with you.
Nagmaid, what's next for you?
You know, I don't know. I'm hoping. I did the 21-day of prayer and fasting because of Daniel. If there's people who might know about that, Daniel in the Bible fasted for 21 days, and there was a breakthrough. And I'm hoping for a breakthrough once we pray and fast. And next, this week, actually, towards the end of this week, on Thursday and Friday, U.S. and Iran are meeting again for the nuclear. And every time they meet, I do pray for wisdom and pray that someone will remember Saeed and make sure he's not left behind, and someone mentions him and during these conversations. And Iran's pushed and pressured to, you know, act and show good faith by releasing Saeed.
Well, and I know you have a lot of people here and around the world that are praying for you and Saeed.
Yes, and I appreciate that. Thank you. And I appreciate your continued support, Kevin. And it's been really a big blessing and treasure in my life, having your station and your support and friendship. Thank you.
Well, Nagmaid, thank you, and God bless you, and please consider us a resource anytime, ma'am.
We will. Thank you.
Nagmaid Abedini with us here at 580KIDO. We do wish her well and admire her courage. You know, how many times, you know, we have our own issues. But as Nagmaid pointed out, finances, job, it all comes down to being irrelevant when you have that relationship with the Lord and when something that you love is taken away from you. We would urge our congressional delegation, I know Senator Crapo, Senator Risch, doing everything that they can to make sure that Pastor Saeed and the other Americans are brought home. I know Nagmeh continues to raise awareness. There she is praying and fasting for 21 days, pointing out just like Daniel. I'd ask you, as we've asked you to pray for those folks in Moscow, to pray for the Saeed family. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Some have asked whether or not the United States should have sent someone with a higher profile than the ambassador to France. And I think it's fair to say that we should have sent someone with a higher profile.
Must Hear Radio every morning with Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
And coming up, we'll get a preview of Detroit's latest. Not only Detroit, but really everybody. We'll go live to the Detroit Auto Show with our friend Jeff Bonasso of Fox News Radio. And do appreciate Nagmeh Dabbadini for joining us. And we urge you to go to Facebook, like Save Saeed, friend Nagmeh, and do what we can here in Idaho to help her. You know, imagine what would it be like if your spouse, your loved one, your brother, your sister was imprisoned by a country that we have no diplomatic relations with and being held against their will, and our government really is trying what they can but hasn't made it happen yet. And I think it comes down to what Nagmeh Dabbadini talked about concerning how we handle news from the Muslim world. And it's been a while since I've taken an Eastern Civ class, but I do remember taking the course in Mecca and Medina and the difference between the Shia and the Sunni.
There, but the impact on journalism long term.
Yeah, there's been a huge amount of focus on the issue of freedom of speech. And of course, because people have raised the question, Mika, of did Charlie Hebdo in some ways go too far? Was that a mitigating circumstance? And I think what you saw yesterday is people saying what we actually have to stand up for is 100% the right for, in a democratic society, people to be able to express themselves in the media however they want to. I think the real challenge is what Chris Dickey said earlier, is not the unity rally that we saw yesterday. And the question of whether the president turned up and didn't turn up, which is a valid one in terms of U.S. politics. But what happened in France in terms of policy? The toxic mix is in those suburbs surrounding Paris, surrounding cities like Toulouse, in prisons where Muslims are being radicalized. And what's the long-term strategy there for trying to detoxify those areas? I'm already getting reports from people in France that some schools in those neighborhoods, in those strongly Muslim neighborhoods, the kids didn't stand for the minute silence. They see those attackers as heroes. How do we change that?
I don't know if you can. More on that in a minute. Jeff Bonasso, our F-150 here at 580 KIDO from Fox News Radio. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, Kevin.
You're having a good day, getting a sneak peek at all the big show in Detroit?
Some really, really cool cars here. Lots of amazing new vehicles, and the F-150 is one of them. Ford really putting all their eggs into one basket. With this all aluminum F-150. In fact, they lost, they put like $700 million into this technology. It affected their bottom line in the third quarter of last year. And it really paid off. That truck winning, truck of the year here, in Detroit, an amazing ride. And, it's Ford's new EcoBoost engine, that is really, propelling this company. And you know, for instance, with the F-150, you've got now a 2.7 liter EcoBoost motor, which is essentially a V6 powering these F-150s, and with you know, giving them the power of the big V8s. They also come in big V8s, but this motor is a great technology for this company, and they're thriving off of it.
Well, you know, how to improve something that was already a top seller in this country. And apparently, Jeff, you've detailed what Ford has done.
Well, it's the technology. It's all about these days, or at least there's a theme in the auto industry of late. It's fuel efficiency. We're seeing that all across the auto industry with the Ford F-150, even with the new Ford GT, it's got that EcoBoost with the 600 horsepower. You're seeing new technology, more fuel-efficient technology in the Nissan Titan. That's a brand-new vehicle that's out, redesigned with a Cummins diesel in that thing that Nissan touts as 20% more fuel-efficient for the big V8 than any other truck in its class. So there's a big competition to get great fuel efficiency for these vehicles. And with gas prices where they are, you know, you're seeing a lot more people that are willing to take that chance to buy those big motors, to buy those big trucks. And it's a great thing for the truck industry.
580KIDO, Jeff Manasso joining us from the auto show, the North American Auto Show. So I'm sure Ford's competitors will not take this lying down.
Well, they're not. You know, there's a lot of competition here at the Detroit Auto Show, which, by the way, opens to the public next week. And there's a lot of head turners too. You know, the new Chevy Colorado, an amazing truck, and you know, one of the coolest cars that I saw here on the floor is the new Acura NSX. It was in the dark for about 10 years, and now they're back with that supercar. By the way, it'll cost you about $150,000 for that thing. Another one of the themes, Kevin, is electric cars, the way of the future. Honda, GM, and Nissan, also Tesla, coming out with a Tesla 3, all concept cars, medium-priced concept cars, all electric, in a $30,000 price range that the companies say would give you about 200-250 miles on a full charge for those vehicles. Again, they're concept vehicles. One of the biggest head turners is Mercedes, what they're out with, and that's the FO15 Luxury in Motion. This is a car that was introduced a couple weeks ago in Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show, and it's a car that really goes beyond the autonomous technology, self-driving cars, which industry experts say will be the future. You know, by 2030, we could have cars that drive us all around, and we're essentially just sitting in those cars and just doing our thing. But that's where the industry's at right now. It's what exactly are you going to do with that technology? How will that experience be? And this particular car, it's got a lounge-like atmosphere with big saloon doors. And once those doors are shut, the inside of the vehicle really kind of becomes interactive displays throughout the car, fully interactive, proximity touch-based, where everybody can be the driver or nobody can be the driver. And the cars in the chairs inside this vehicle, kind of like an RV, where the front seats swivel around for face-to-face interaction. So that's where the industry is at right now. They're trying to figure out what we're going to do with that technology. How will that experience be like? And Mercedes has nailed it. It's a pretty neat concept.
Jeff, you're always, you know, you keep your distance to stories. As a reporter, you remain objective. But just as a person walking around there, you know, does shock and awe to describe what you're seeing that'll be open to the public next week?
You know, I don't know about shock and awe. I mean, if you're a car enthusiast, you love the auto show no matter what. And it's cool to see any new car, even if it's just, you know, a car that we're already you know, familiar with. The whole Dodge line, the Dodge Challenger, I sat in one of those things yesterday, and the new one is sweet. You know, any of the new cars, you know what, they just look prettier here at the Detroit Auto Show, and I think with the theme of fuel efficiency and with gas prices where they're at, it's you know, causing people to take a second look or a second thought. You know, maybe I will buy that bigger car or bigger truck, or maybe now is a good time to buy a vehicle. And man, you know, I'm not disappointed with any cars here. The Honda line is really great. The Nissan line is out with a great package of vehicles. They're all great.
Jeff Manasso, you're not so bad yourself. We plan to talk to you this week for a preview of what's going to happen in Seattle.
Well, you know, it's going to be a really tough game. And look, it could go either way, but, you know, I'm not going to lie. I think any team playing in Seattle at that stadium, they've got their hands full. You know, and you know, as a fan of the green and gold, I'm right there thinking, you know, that we can do this. It's really anybody's game to win. You look over the AFC, your team, your Patriots. I think that they're going to be successful over the Colts, but you know, look, this is the playoffs and anything can happen. It's do or die. And this is really where it's fun. And, I hope we can do it.
Well, I wish your guy was healthy.
So do I.
Yeah.
But you know what, in the words of Aaron Rodgers, relax. I think that if anybody can do it, it's Aaron Rodgers. But you know, it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I know you're going to be wearing your cheese head on Sunday.
I am a cheese head, Jeff. Thank you.
You bet.
Jeff Manasso joining us here. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work.
Weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning. It's 8:54. Don't forget Glenn Beck, Dave Ramsey, Sean Hannity coming up today. 580-KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And one of the big questions we've been when talking about is just how serious we are in attacking radical Islam. And just how, look, no one wants to believe that the president's heart is not in the game, right? Whether people agree with the president or not, you want your commander-in-chief to stand up for everything that's good and wholesome in America. And I think whether you're a proponent of the president or an opponent, you take a look at his actions lately, and you just wonder, you know, where we're going. I've heard more, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think I heard more outrage about the movie The Interview from this administration than the attacks in France. Remember Jay Carney saying, hey, 2 years ago, you don't want to mess with those folks because they may come back to get you. And as we heard, from one of the clips at 580 KIDO, they're saying, well, the children believe that the terrorists are the heroes. Well, of course, that's what they're taught. And how can we teach them that we're not? If you're going to believe that killing innocent people for their faith in God, for being a Christian, for being a Jew, is right, can we really say that you're redeemable? And even the press is trying not to give the president a pass, rightly so. CNN asking the White House press secretary, hey, if the president decided not to go to France, who did?
Sense here that the White House should have sent somebody with a higher profile to the march. Jim.
So what you're saying is that the White House made a mistake. Just want to make that clear. You haven't used that
word.
Well,
I mean, if we should have, essentially I'm suggesting that we should have done something differently, so I think it's fair for you to assess that.
The president believe that the White House made a mistake?
I have not spoken to the president about this specific matter.
And you said that this decision did not reach his level. Doesn't the buck stop with the president?
It always does. He'd be the first to tell you that.
Yeah. So why wasn't this decision brought to him?
Well, Jim, I'm not going to sort of unpack the planning and logistics that go into these kinds of decisions.
Why not?
Well, just because that'd be pretty complicated. Maybe not.
An interagency failure, perhaps the White House was not talking about that.
I mentioned in response to Major's question that the responsibility lays here at the White House for finding appropriate representation at the march. We certainly were pleased that the U.S. ambassador to France could participate in that march. That sends an important signal, too.
You got 40 world leaders standing up to the extremist, supporting the French press. Joe Biden was free. President Obama was free. John Kerry was free. Eric Holder was in France. And nobody stood with the French. By the way, the French prime minister was the first one to visit America after 9/11. I mean, actions do speak louder than words. And I don't want to go with Kerry Patton. I appreciate his honesty, but we can't turn into the everything stinks crowd. We have to figure out where the issue is. I think it's the press. You know, selfishly, I want you to support this show because we're there to give you the alternative, the voice. I mean, let's face it. How can you sit there and give the president a pass when this has happened? By the way, when Nelson Mandela died, the president was there. It was Mandela more important than those innocents in France? And does that, by him not going, does he send a message to our opponents that his heart is not in the game? I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at 580KIDO on Twitter, Kevin at KIDOAM.com, Kevin Miller Show on Twitter. Tell me what you think, and we'll talk about it. Let's get you to traffic. Still, like I said, watch out. Still very foggy. Maybe one day we'll get a break from this inversion. I appreciate you listening. Keep the faith, brothers and sisters. Keep the faith. We're all in this together. Have a great day. God bless.